Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told, and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Good afternoon. You just joined the Enlightened Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. I am your storytelling host for the next 57 minutes. I'm Fanny Crawford, and so glad you could join us today. It's Monday, September 24th, and our theme on the Storytelling Hour is harvest. So we're going to be telling stories about harvest of all sorts and types. And we have a couple poems and maybe a song. I think you'll find we have quite an eclectic mix today. That was Andy Offutt Irwin. You heard opening our program today. Andy is a singer, songwriter, and very popular storyteller. He'll be at Jonesboro in the National Storytelling Festival in Tennessee the beginning of October, and has been here in West Virginia several times. And he's given us permission to use Tarry Here, his original work, his original song, as our opening to this show. Thank you, Andy, for that. I'm going to start the program with a kind of a benediction or thought-provoking piece that I just came across. So the fall equinox was this past Saturday at 9:54 p.m. for our particular region. And this is related to that event and the end of summer, beginning of the fall season. It's by Andrew Pakula, who's a member of the General Assembly of Unitarian and Free Christian Churches, that association of British Unitarians. He's and a Unitarian minister, but all of that's not necessarily relevant. I just liked the piece. Over our heads, the great wheel of stars shifts. The autumnal equinox manifests itself, and for one precious instant, darkness and light exist in balanced proportion to one another. Within our minds, the great web of neurons shifts. New consciousness arises, and for one precious instant, experience and meaning exist together as revelation and epiphany. Within our hearts, the great rhythm of our lives shifts, a new way of being reveals itself. And for one precious instant, the nexus of the body and the seat of the soul truly exist as one. Let us give thanks for those times in our lives when all seems in balance, for those times are rare and precious. The equinox shall pass. The revelation may be forgotten, and our actions will not always reflect our true selves, but through our gratitude, we may remember who we are, reflect on who we may become, and restore the balance which brings equanimity to our lives. Let us be quiet for a moment together. Well, that may be the last real quiet we have on this program today. You didn't tune in to hear quiet, but this program is a sort of a quiet program, I guess, in the rush of things. And I thought we would introduce our harvest theme that way. I want to do a shout out for the Speak Storytelling series, second Tuesdays of the month, story listeners get together to hear a usually nationally renowned storyteller. And coming up in October is no exception. Second Tuesday of the month will be October 9th. And Linda Gorham is the featured teller that evening at 7:30 at Reynolds Hall. And you can get more information by going to speakstoryseries.com. But I'll tell you a bit about Linda Gorham. She's an international teller. She tells a lot of fairy tales, a lot of folk tales, and usually puts them in perspective with what's going on in the world around us, in our families and in our lives. She tells some Haitian and African tales, but that's part of a larger pantheon of international tales. So, and actually, I've heard Linda Gorham once. I believe it was last year at the National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro. So I know that you will be interested in hearing her. So you can go to speakstoryseries.com for more information about Linda Gorham on October 9th. Then on November 13th, which is also a second Tuesday, Megan Wells is the featured storyteller at Speak. And I believe this past year I also heard her at Jonesboro, either last year or the year before, heard her at Jonesboro, and can highly recommend her as well. And then in December, December 11th, Elizabeth Ellis will close out the season with the storytelling program that she was snowed out of back in March. And we're hoping for sunshine on December 11th. I'm sure Elizabeth is hoping for that too. The grand dame of storytelling, coming to us for the second time this season, because she did do a workshop while she was here in March, but the concert didn't come off because of the weather. So I hope you get to come and hear her at Reynolds Hall, 7:30 on December 11th, Megan Wells on November 13th, and Linda Gorham on October 9th. Okay, since our theme today is harvest, I'm going to go right into our next piece, which is a poem that I came across recently. This is a poem by Amy Gerstler, and I don't think this piece has been published in a book yet. I discovered it as part of a couple poetry sites that I subscribe to. So it came to me through its original publication in Poem a Day on September 1st, 2017. The Academy of American Poets does that website, www.poets.org. But it was also published on the WordPress poetry site, Daily Verse 365. So you can look that up if you want. I just think this poem is exquisite. To a Head of Lettuce by Amy Gerstler. May I venture to address you, vegetal friend? A lettuce is no less than me, so I respect you. Though it's also true I may make a salad of you later. That's how we humans roll. Our species is blowing it big time, as you no doubt know. Dependent as you are on water and soil, we humans pollute. You're a crisp head, an iceberg lettuce, scorned in days of yore for being mostly fiber and water. But new research claims you've gotten a bad rap, that you're more nutritious than we knew. Juicy and beautiful, your leaves can be used as tortillas. And if you peer through a lettuce leaf, the view takes on the translucent green of the newest shoots sitting atop your pile, next to heaps of radicchio. You do seem a living head, a royal personage who should be paid homage. I am not demanding to be reassured. I just want to know what you know, what you think your role is, and hear what you have to say about suffering long denied, the wisdom of photosynthesis, stages of growth you've passed through. I can almost hear your voice as I pay for you at the cash register. A slightly gravelly sound like Kendrick Lamar's voice or early Bob Dylan, both singers of gruff, poetic truth. Nothing less was expected from you, Sister Lettuce. Nothing less. That was Amy Gerstler's To a Head of Lettuce, and you can find that at www.poets.org. That's the poem a day site of the Academy of American Poets, or you can go to dailyverse365.wordpress.com. It's not available in a book so far, as I know, though it fairly recent poem from 2017, almost a year ago, or a little more than a year ago, as a matter of fact. Okay, so here we are at enlightenradio.org, and I'm happy that you joined us today. I am Fanny Crawford. You might be wondering, where is Stasz Silkowski? And perhaps you're wondering where we've been the past few weeks. The station has been on a sort of hiatus. We did broadcast some storytelling hours while our station manager was away. But now we're back in person, and Stasz Silkowski will be back with us next week. So you can tune in to hear both of us at that point. I'm going to do a little bit of a story called Radishes. Actually, sometimes I call this story The Secret Garden. So you may have heard it under either of those titles. I think I've even told it on the radio before, but it's an original story, a personal, true story. Once upon a time, there was a little girl who lived with her family in an apartment building in a big city. One spring day, her dad brought home a packet of radish seeds. There was a photograph of a radish on the outside, a red and white radish so large it covered almost the whole packet. Underneath the picture were the words radish seeds. Her dad said, "The seeds came from the bank." The little girl giggled, "Daddy, people don't buy seeds at the bank. They buy money at the bank." But her dad was serious. He showed her the words printed on the back of the seed packet. "Plant a seed today for a bountiful harvest tomorrow." At Fidelity Bank. And then he laughed and said, "Everybody knows the bank is in business to make sure somebody has a bountiful harvest." He patted her on the head, handed her the seeds, and said, "You could plant those seeds sometime and see what comes up." Well, he might have been thinking she would plant them in a flower pot, but the little girl took the seeds outside instead. They lived on the first floor of a three-story apartment building, mostly encircled in concrete. In the front, to the side of the wide concrete steps, was a 6 by 6 foot bare black dirt square. The little girl could walk along each side of the square and count her steps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 feet, if she spread out her steps far enough. The dirt was surrounded on four sides by a hedge that was taller than she was. It was pretty dark inside the hedge, even when the sun was shining, because of how tall the hedges were. The little girl was comfortable in there because she often played there. Like when the neighborhood kids organized a game of hide-and-seek, that was a good place to hide. It smelled a bit different in there. It smelled like cat pee. This little girl had a fleeting acquaintance with a dozen feral neighborhood cats. Felis silvestris abruptus, her mother called them. The kind you only saw as they streaked by you, running from one hiding place under a parked car to hide under another parked car. There were also three or four more socialized cats who lived indoors part-time with our neighbors. Cats and cat pee were part of the family's ecosystem. The little girl planted the radish seeds, 15 to 20 seeds in a row about 6 inches inside and almost under one of the hedgerows. She was afraid to plant too far into the square because children or even grown-ups might walk there. This was to be a secret garden, carefully hidden to protect the baby radishes. Planting the seeds was a special project, a sort of magical alchemical mission, and she wanted no critics or observers if things went awry. The dirt was damp and easy to dig in. There was lots of rain that spring. She checked the little garden nursery every day for a full week, impatient to see the development of baby radishes. At the end of the week, little green leaf blades appeared all in a line. She continued watching every day for another week. Each little sprout now had two little baby leaves. A third week came and went, and there in the dark under the hedge, the leaves were a quarter inch across. All this time, she had shared the secret garden with no one. She even waited before entering and exiting the garden to be sure no one was watching. But now she had come to the end of her patience. There must be radishes by now. She knelt in the dirt and carefully pulled each plant, one by one, looking carefully for radishes. And as she pulled, she lined them up neatly in a row next to their former holes. She could see no radishes. A wave of disappointment washed over the little girl. She felt terrible. She had killed them all by pulling them up. She'd wanted to save them from marauding cats, dogs, children, and grown-ups. Yet she herself, their parent and protector, had murdered them before their time. She could feel the tears welling up in her eyes, and her nose had that wet, prickly feeling. At that very moment, a beam of sunlight shone down. The rain clouds overhead parted just a bit, and it was suddenly a bit brighter inside the hedge. She picked up one of the roots, just 1 inch long. All of those roots, slender and fragile as they were bright red all the way to the roots at the tip. And seeing the bright red of those teeny tiny roots was like another beam of sunshine in her heart. She began to see things in a new way. She was not a guilty murderer. She was a farmer, the creator of a bountiful harvest, and completing this transformation from failure to bountiful harvest, she did what any old MacDonald or queen of the harvest would do with their radishes. She gathered them up, all of them, and quite simply ate them, relishing the sweet, earthy aromas of her secret garden. That was an original story called Radishes, or sometimes Secret Garden. I'm Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host for the Storytelling Hour on EnlightenRadio.org on this Monday, September 24th. Thanks for joining us. Okay, so I said we were going to have an eclectic day today. I think I also told you that our theme is harvest, and I've divided this hour into three parts. So we are on part one, harvest of the heart. And there's one more piece to this part of the hour before we move on to part two. Okay, here we go. The earth is our mother. We must take care of her. The earth is our mother. We must take care of her. Hey, younger, ho, younger, hey, young, young. Hey, younger, ho, younger, hey, young, young. Her sacred ground we walk upon with every step we take. Her sacred ground we walk upon with every step we take. Hey, younger, ho, younger, hey, young, young. Hey, younger, ho, younger, hey, young, young. The earth is our mother. She will take care of us. The earth is our mother. She will take care of us. Hey, younger, ho, younger, hey, young, young. Hey, younger, ho, younger, hey, young, young. The sky is our father. We will take care of him. The sky is our father. We will take care of him. Hey, younger, ho, younger, hey, young, young. Hey, younger, ho, younger, hey, young, young. Sea is our sister. We will take care of her. Sea is our sister. We will take care of her. Hey, younger, ho, younger, hey, young, young. Hey, younger, ho, younger, hey, young, young. Forest is our brother. We will take care of him. The forest is our brother. We will take care of him. Hey, younger, ho, younger, hey, young, young. Hey, younger, ho, younger, hey, young, young. That's a Native American prayer of sorts for our end of part one of our three-part theme today. We're ending the section called Harvest of the Heart and entering upon part two. A little bit of a change of pace on the Enlightened Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. I'm your storytelling host, Fanny Crawford. And part two is it's titled and then subtitled. The harvest that is of an age of man, woman, or nation. Subtitled, A Harvest of Regret. But you will not regret going to Stories in the Round, storytelling series in Hagerstown, Maryland, that will have its September offering this evening at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown, out on Searfoss Pike. If you know Hagerstown at all, that's Salem Avenue. The far western end of Salem Avenue becomes Searfoss Pike, and the address of storytelling this evening at 7 p.m. is 13245 Searfoss Pike. It's just past the back entrance to the Walmart shopping center off of Searfoss Pike. So come out tonight and see Zuni Matama tell stories this evening. Zuni has her own particular kind of harvest that you will be interested in. She is a storyteller, an actor, a reconciliation facilitator, a playwright, a theater director, and as well as being the seventh generation great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter of a personal maidservant to Martha Washington. And I am not exactly sure what she's going to cover today, this evening, at her storytelling hour at Stories in the Round, but I'm guessing she's going to cover some of that history. So, if you want more information about this evening's performance, you can call me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638, or you can reach me via email at Fanitsky, F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y, Fanitsky at hotmail.com. Give me some time to get off the air first, but I would love to tell you all about Stories in the Round. We usually meet the fourth Monday of the month, and in October we will be meeting on the fourth Monday with Ann Thomas. Ann Thomas will be our featured storyteller that day, and Ann's a former civil rights attorney, and some of her stories cover her experiences in that realm, in that universe, but she also tells some far out personal stories that are kind of adventure stories. And but I haven't heard her tell for more than a year, I think. So I'm looking forward to hearing her new projects. And she's been out of the country. She's been in Greece for a while, almost a month, I think. And she just got back in town yesterday, I believe. So I'll be hearing more from her about what she has planned for October 22nd. But you can also hear more about Ann Thomas by coming to hear Zuni Matema, who's our storytelling this evening at Stories in the Round. And my phone number will get you all the information you need, 301-730-1638, or email fanitsky at hotmail.com. $10 in advance. There is still a diminishing window for you to get your tickets in advance before 7 p.m. this evening by calling that number, because you will save a few bucks. $10 in advance, $12 at the door. Okay, we are now on part two of our harvest theme, the harvest that is of an age of man, woman, or nation, subtitled A Harvest of Regret. And when we finish this part of our harvest theme, we will go on to part three. But right now, I am going to share one of my favorite regretful poems. This is not my own poem. This is a famous poet, William Butler Yeats. And actually, I have two Yeats poems that we might hear today, but this is not the happy one. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the second coming is at hand. The second coming. Hardly are those words out when a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. Somewhere in sands of the desert, a shape with lion body and head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun, is moving its slow thighs, while all about it reel shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again, but now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle, and what rough beast its hour come round at last slouches towards Bethlehem to be born. That was William Butler Yeats's poem, The Second Coming. And that was, I found that originally in William Butler Yeats' Collected Poems, 1951, published by Macmillan. We'll see if we have time for another William Butler Yeats poem in a bit. I wanted to talk a bit about harvest in the sense of fruits and vegetables, because we're in that season, and even though we're talking about spiritual forms of harvest as well as the kind that comes from the earth, it seems important to ground ourselves. So some of you have heard me tell a story, a fairly long story, about John Chapman, Johnny Appleseed, and the connections I made between John Chapman and my great-great-grandfather, who was a gardener and a seed man, and hearing about John Chapman as a child, watching the Walt Disney movie at summer camp with that cartoon guy, Johnny, and the pot on his head, and becoming enamored of that idea that you could travel, that you could live your life carrying everything you need, and what did you have that would have to do double duty, wearing a pot on my head in my house as a seven-year-old, testing out those theories and experimenting with what it would be like to go camping with no tent, with no car, with no brother, baby brother, and parents along to burden you, but just be out in the woods on your own with a sack and a pot on your head. Researching John Chapman and learning about cider apples and learning that Johnny Appleseed, the real Johnny Appleseed, John Chapman, did not care about actual eating apples that much. He was concerned about cider apples because he didn't believe in grafting. So he was using what we might today call feral apples, or apples that he sprouted from seed. He only used apple seedlings from seed that he planted, which is a whole different way of looking at apples. So, of course, hard cider was not featured in that Walt Disney film about Johnny Appleseed, and I did not learn about the realities of apples on the American frontier until, a couple years ago, when I decided I wanted to tell a John Chapman story. And it's very different than the Johnny Appleseed that I grew up with. Aside from being a total loner, which we all knew a bit about, he was not really literally a loner. He spent a lot of time with other people, but he didn't generally live with other people except as a sometime visitor. So he did like to be before a warm hearth when the ground was covered with snow, and he did that by showing up with religious tracts under his arm, sometimes books that he would rip in two or three or four or five places and leave a chapter at each homestead with instructions that they should share, trade for the tracts that he had left at some other nearby homestead. Or, you know, maybe a day or two away from that homestead. We're talking pioneer times when people did not live even necessarily within smoke distance of their neighbor's chimney, not able to know how your neighbors were doing unless you went over the mountain to visit them. So maybe we'll tell that full Johnny Appleseed story, that John Chapman story, at some time in the near future as we get into the fall. But just the names of apples is what I want to share today. I have this beautiful book that a friend gave me, oh, close to 20 years ago. That has gorgeous pictures of apple orchards and apples themselves, and very wonderful recipes. I've actually made a couple of recipes out of this book. It's by Mark Rosenstein. But one of the things I like the best about this book, and it's not a new book, it's, I think, 1996 was the publication date, but the names of these apple varieties, I'm just going to share some of them with you. They're in alphabetical order in the book, so that's how I'm going to do it. And I may stop along the way and point out a cider apple or a dessert apple, which is what people in the apple business call the ones that you eat out of your hand. If you don't have to cook them or douse them with sauces, if you just pick up an apple, rinse it, and take a bite, and you're happy with that. That's a dessert apple. So Arkansas Black is a dessert apple. Ashmead's Kernel is a dessert apple. Ashton Brown Jersey is a vintage cider apple. Perhaps early enough. Well, no, it says right here, 1920s. So not old enough to have been known by John Chapman. Baldwin's. I can remember eating Baldwin apples. These are what Macintosh apples replaced. It's hard to find Baldwin's these days. Braeburn's. Bramley Seedling apples. They're a sauce apple. Bulmer's Norman, another cider apple. Calville Blanc, an all-purpose apple, delicious in all its iterations. Chisel Jersey, it's an English variety, produces a bittersweet, astringent juice, and a full bittersweet cider. And because it's English, this is pronounced J.C. Chisel. A J.C. is a bitter apple in general, but a Chisel J.C. is this particular one for cider. Cortland apples, you can still find those out and about, even in supermarkets. Cox's Orange Pippin Empire. Esopus Spitzenberg, a favorite apparently of Thomas Jefferson, originating in Esopus, the town of Esopus in Ulster County, New York, in the late 1700s, and a likely parent of Jonathan from the Baldwin apple family. Dessert apple, cooking apple, an excellent keeper. Foxwhelp, how's that for an apple name? That's another vintage apple going way back to the 1600s. It's an English apple. Fuji, not as new as I thought it was. 1939, a cross between North American parents Rawls, Janet, and Red Delicious. Very popular in Japan and China, as well as the U.S., and probably originated in Japan, even though it had North American parents. Gala apples, we're all familiar with those. Golden Delicious, Golden Russet, Granny Smith, Gravenstein, Grimes Gold, High Slop Crab, Ida Red, Jonna Gold, Jonathan Lady, Macintosh, Michelin, Mutsu. I had a Mutsu apple just about a month ago. It was really very interesting. You may know it as Crispin. It's a Japanese cross between a Golden Delicious and an Indo, developed in the 1930s and known in Japan as the million-dollar apple for the high price it fetches. I think I paid $2 for the Mutsu that I ate. Newtown Pippin, Nonpareil, Northern Spy, Northwestern Greening, Pitmaston Pineapple, an old, old variety of russeted English dessert apple. Very small, very sweet. and the flavor often compared to pineapples. Never seen or heard of one of those. Red Delicious Rhode Island Greening Rome Beauty Roxbury Russet, probably the oldest named variety in North America, discovered in Roxbury, Massachusetts during the early 17th century. So likely John Chapman knew this apple. Very high sugar content, sweet, medium acid, fruit, a fine clear cider with an aromatic flavor, and a 6% alcohol content. And Mark Rosenstein says that you can use Roxbury russets for dessert, eating out of hand, for cooking, for cider, and they are excellent keepers. Smith Cider Apple, Spartan, Stamen Wine Sap, Soir with two A's in the middle. It's a Dutch apple, or originating with Dutch Americans in the Hudson River Valley in upstate New York, dates back to around 1770. High sugar content, improves in flavor with storage, an excellent keeper, and it hangs on the tree for a long, long time, so it's a friend to wildlife as well. Sweet Coppin, Virginia, sometimes called Hughes Crab, and another favorite of Thomas Jefferson, and really only good for cider unless you're a very brave soul who doesn't mind very strong, tart apples. Juice ferments very slowly to produce a highly flavored, dry cider. Wine Sap, Yarlington Mill, and York Imperial. We are savoring the poetry of apple varieties. From a book called In Praise of Apples by Mark Rosenstein, A Harvest of History, Horticulture, and Recipes. We are still on part two of our harvest theme today, Monday, September 24th, 2018. I'm Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host at enlightenradio.org, and we were just savoring the harvest of names of apple varieties. I'm going to pull that second poem of William Butler Yeats that I promised you earlier. If I can find it here quickly, I might have to go to a different one. I thought I had it marked, and it's not showing up. Here it is. And you may actually know this as a song. Several, Judy Collins, among other people, sang this song. I'm just going to use the poem today. I went out to the hazelwood because a fire was in my head, and cut and peeled a hazel wand and hooked a berry to a thread. And when white moths were on the wing and moth-like stars were flickering out, I dropped the berry in a stream and caught a little silver trout. When I had laid it on the floor and went to blow the fire aflame, something rustled on the floor and someone called me by my name. It had become a glimmering girl with apple blossom in her hair, who called me by my name and ran and faded through the brightening air. Though I am old with wandering through hollow lands and hilly lands, I will find out where she has gone and kiss her lips and take her hands and walk
through long and dappled grass and pluck till time and times are done. Silver apples of the moon, golden apples of the sun.
That's William Butler Yeats's poem, The Song of Wandering Angus. Angus is the Celtic god of love. That might be one of my all-time favorite songs, favorite poems. Judy Collins made that poem much more famous than it would have been because she sang it, set to music. But we must honor William Butler Yeats when we sing or recite that poem. I thought that fit well with our apple theme and our harvest theme, especially if we think about harvest of regrets. Okay, so we are moving on to part three of our harvest theme this afternoon. Goodbye to summer. And before I go any more with part three, goodbye to summer, I want to make sure that you know about a brand new story series that has opened in Frederick, Maryland, sponsored by New Spire Arts, which is a fairly new arts-focused organization. They sponsor dance performances and dance classes. They sponsor music classes and music performances. They have a music open mic. They have a spoken word, a poetry open mic, monthly, just all different kinds of arts programs going on at New Spire Arts. And yesterday, Sunday, September 23rd, was the grand opening for the storytelling open mic in Frederick, Maryland at New Spire Arts, 115 East Church Street, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Sundays, usually the fourth Sunday of the month. If you missed this one, you can look forward to the next one in October, but it won't be on the fourth Sunday like most of them will be. There was already something scheduled for that holiday weekend, and so this one will be October 21st instead of the fourth Sunday. It'll be the third Sunday, and Jane Dorfman is the featured storyteller coming up on that day, and Susan Gordon will be co-hosting that session with me. So I hope you can come out at 3 p.m. to New Spire Arts at 115 East Church Street in Frederick. And if you want more information about the series in general and you want to read a bit about Jane Dorfman, you can go to newspirearts.org, and there's a crawl across the bottom of the page. And if you look for the person who looks like a storyteller, you can click on that, or you can go to events and get in through the back door. You can sign up. You can pay your, I think, $15 in advance, $20 at the door. So there's a bit of a savings there, not just a couple bucks. So you might want to register in advance. And I'm not sure you're able to sign up for open mic telling yet. You can, you only, as far as I know, as of yesterday, you could only register for the event, and then you would sign up for open mic when you get there. And you do, if you want to tell a story, you might want to get there early because we'll be taking those signups between 2:30 when the doors open and just a little bit after 3 when we start the session, so we can get our ducks in a row. But before open mic starts, you'll hear a story from the two co-hosts, one each, and then you will hear a much longer story, a 30-minute set from Jane Dorfman before we start the open mics. Yesterday's session was just wonderful. It was small. We had about I think a little around a dozen people, maybe a few less than a dozen people. And almost everybody told a story. It was quite exciting. Diane Macklin was our featured teller, and she just blew our socks off, as Diane usually does when she tells stories. And she got everybody up and telling their stories. It was quite wonderful. There were a couple people who sat out, but almost everybody, once they were fired up from Diane, decided, well, they did have a story after all. I really enjoyed myself. So I hope you're able to check it out at newspirearts.org and then come out for storytelling on October 21st. But that'll be long after you've come to Stories in the Round on September 24th, tonight, this evening, in Hagerstown at the Unitarian Universalist Church, 13245 Searfoss Pike. More information about that, call me, 301-730-1638, and come out for Speak on October 9th to hear Linda Gorham. Okay, so that's enough about story calendar. I may tell you a bit about the Jonesboro Festival, the National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee, and the NABS Story Conference. National Association of Black Storytellers is holding their annual conference in North Carolina this year, the last weekend in October and into November. So I hope you will check those out. You can go to NABS.org, I believe, or just Google National Association of Black Storytellers. And if you just Google National Storytelling Festival, you'll get to Jonesboro, Tennessee's site for that event. So we're talking about goodbye to summer as the third part of our harvest theme today. And we're on the downside. We're coming around the curve toward the end of our session. But we still have some wonderful things coming up. I guess I want to start the section, the part three of today's program, by saying some thank yous. We're talking about harvest and saying goodbye to the summer includes being grateful for the fruits of this summer, as well as the fruits of everything else that happened this summer besides gardening. I did a lot of gardening this summer. I probably averaged about 6 or 7 hours a week over the course of this summer, which is on the high side for me. There have been summers where I've barely put in an hour or two a week, and I had a wonderful time out there. Planted some new things. I'd never planted potatoes before. This was a first for me this summer. Blue potatoes from Peru, and had a fine harvest of those, and several other new things, and most of my stuff did really well, except for the rabbit food. A lot of my best efforts became rabbit fodder. So I'm at detente with the rabbits in our neighborhood. But nonetheless, I did have a great summer and made friends with a few too many rabbits. But after all, their family was there first. This is called A Harvest of Gratitude. It's a reading from, or a kind of a benediction, I guess, from Percival Chubb, who is most famous as a founding member of the 19th century British organization Fellowship of the New Life and its sister political organization, the Fabian Society. Now, the Fellowship of the New Life was founded in 1883 and included such luminaries as Havelock Ellis, who you may know as a sexologist, as well as a philosopher on various other topics, and feminist Edith Lees, novelist Olive Schreiner, and even the UK, future UK Prime Minister, Ramsay MacDonald, not future in our time, but future for that time, turn of the 19th century. And those people were heavily influenced by our own Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson. And they had a publication, their primary publication was called Seed Time, which also seemed appropriate for our harvest theme today. Many of the fellowship's members advocated for pacifism, vegetarianism, and simplified living. They were all under the spell or under the tutelage of Leo Tolstoy and some of his ideas and his literature. But a separate group was established for political activity and named the Fabian Society. And although the Fellowship for New Life disbanded in 1898, the Fabians continue to be influential. Even today, they were Jawaharlal Nehru in India, founder of Pakistan, Muhammad al-Jinnah, and Nigerian independence leader Obafemi Awokalon, were all followers of Fabian thought and included much of Fabian writings in their philosophies as they went on to change the world. So this is a harvest of gratitude from one of those Fellowship of the New Life and Fabian Society people, Percival Chubb. Once more, the fields have ripened to harvest, and the fruitful earth has fulfilled the promise of spring. The work of those who labor has been rewarded. They have sown and reaped, planted and gathered. How rich and beautiful is the bounty gathered, the golden grain and clustered corn, the grapes of purple and green, the crimson apples and yellow pears, and all the colors of orchard and garden, vineyard and field. Season follows after season, after winter the spring, after summer the harvest-laden autumn, from bud to blossom, from flower to fruit, from seed to bud again, the beauty of earth unfolds. From the harvest of the soil, we are given occasion to garner a harvest of the heart and mind, a harvest of resolve to be careful stewards of all life's gifts and opportunities, a harvest of reverence for the wondrous power and life at work in things that grow and in the soul, a harvest of gratitude for every good which we enjoy, and a fellowship for all who are sustained by Earth's bounty. That was A Harvest of Gratitude by Percival Chubb. And I am your storytelling host, Fanny Crawford, on the Enlightened Storytelling Hour. We are a community-based internet facilitated radio show, radio program. I'm going to tell a real quick story for our final story of the day, and then I'm going to close out. This is a story from the Iroquois Nation, Native Americans, the Haudenosaunee, the people of the Longhouse. I told this story yesterday at the open mic session at New Spire Arts in Frederick yesterday, because our theme was community, and this story not only fits our harvest theme today, it's also near and dear to my heart as an example of community out in the world. Every single summer when I was a child, my family visited Salamanca, New York, and while we were there, each year, we went to the Museum of the Seneca, one of the five tribes of the Iroquois Nation. Once upon a time, a long, long ago, when the people were just learning how to feed their children. There were three sisters who lived together in a field where the sun shone bright. They were all three gifted and beautiful, but strikingly different from each other in size, clothing, temperament as well. Osaida, also known as Beans, was the first sister, the littlest one, so delicate that she could only crawl along the ground, twining around her big sisters for comfort and support. She dressed all in shades of green, from the palest green, like lake water, the green of lake water as you hold it in the bowl of your hands, to the deepest, richest shades of green, like the leaves of the oldest trees. Onayosha, Squash, the second sister, wore a dress of brilliant yellow. Days when the sun shone bright and hot in the sky, she loved to spread her green overskirts, protecting her sister's tender roots, and then laugh over her shoulder and run off by herself to the far ends of the field. Oneo, Corn, the eldest sister, stood always straight and tall above her sisters, guarding them faithfully, always there for them to lean on. She wore a light green shawl and had long yellow hair fluttering about her head in the breeze. There were many ways the sisters were different, but at least one way in which they were all the same. They loved one another dearly and were never separated. If you asked, they would say they could never live apart for long. One day, a stranger came to the field of the three sisters, a young boy of the Haudenosaunee, child of the people of the Longhouse. He was straight as an arrow that he carried on his back, fearless as the eagle that circled the sky above his head, and he knew the languages of the birds and the five small brothers of the earth, the fox, the groundhog, the squirrel, the chipmunk, and the shrew. The three sisters, the one who was just able to crawl, the one in the yellow dress, and the one with the flowing yellow hair, were very interested in this young man. They watched him fit an arrow in his bow, saw him carve a wooden bowl with his stone knife, and wondered where he went at sundown every night to sleep. Late in the summer of the first coming of the Haudenosaunee child to their field, one of the three sisters vanished. This was the youngest sister in green, the one who could only crawl. Her sisters mourned for her, but she did not return. The child of the Haudenosaunee came to the field of the sisters again. He came to gather reeds at the edge of a stream to make arrow shafts. The two sisters who were left watched him and gazed with wonder at the trail his feet made, the prints his feet made in the soft earth. And soon the second of the sisters vanished, the one who was dressed in yellow and always wanted to run away. She left no trail of her going. It may be that she set her feet in the moccasin tracks of that boy child. Now there was but one of the sisters left. Tall and straight, she stood in the field, not once bowing her head with sorrow. But it seemed to her she could not live there without her beloved sisters. The days grew shorter and the nights colder. Her green shawl faded and grew thin and tattered. Her hair, once long and golden, was dry and tangled by the wind. Day and night, she sighed for her sisters to return, but they did not hear. Her voice, when she called to them, was low and plaintive like the wind. But one day, in the season of the harvest, the child of the Haudenosaunee heard the crying of the third sister, left to mourn there in the field. He heard her sadness, and taking her in his arms, he carried her to the longhouse of his mother, and father. And there in the longhouse she found her two lost sisters, safe and well and very glad to see her. They had been curious about the child of the Haudenosaunee and had followed him home to see how and where he lived. They liked his warm longhouse so well. They had decided now that winter was coming, they would stay. And they were doing all they could to be useful. The little sister in green, now quite grown up, was helping to feed the family. The sister in yellow had lain herself on a shelf to dry, for she planned to help fill the dinner pot later. The third sister joined them, ready to grind meal for the child and his people. And so the three sisters were never separated again. Every spring, the people of the Longhouse plant the three sisters together in a single mound. Again and again and again across the fields where the sun shines brightest, to feed themselves and their children. The Haudenosaunee and the three sisters are excellent neighbors, a community caring for and nurturing each other year after year across the generations. That was the Iroquois story of the three sisters. I've been your storytelling host, Fanny Crawford, on the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. Come back next week at 12 noon to listen to more stories, and we'll have Stasz Zielkowski back with us, woohoo, ready to tell us some of his stories and maybe the story of what he's been up to these long weeks that he's been away. I hope to see you out and about at some of the storytelling venues I told you about earlier. If you missed some of that, you can go to a podcast of this program. It should be up by about Wednesday at talltales.enlightenradio.org. And in the meantime, tell each other stories, listen to each other's stories, and come back so that we can share more with you next Monday at 12 noon. Thanks. Stay tuned for more on Enlightened Radio.